Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today is Jared Weiss. He is from CelticsWire.com and CLNS Media. Jared, how's it going?
It is fantastic. I've been in Europe for 2 weeks, and I'm back just in time for the start of regular season. And I spent the morning puking my brains out, getting adjusted to being back in America, but now I'm ready for basketball.
I'm jealous that you were in Europe. I miss being in Europe. But just so the listeners know, we're recording this on a Sunday at around 3:30, so this is pre-media availability, pre-game notes that you may get from some of the coaches. So if things change, that's why. You're not in a time loop or something like that. It's just we're recording early to get ahead, mostly because I have to travel far away from Cleveland, Ohio, this week. But Jared, a lot has changed with Boston. A lot changed with the Cavs. Those things are very related, you know. But what is the mood around the Celtics team right now? What are they talking about right now as they get started for the season?
The mood has been cautious optimism, I guess, especially since the Kyrie trade. Because I think after they brought in Hayward and they made the Bradley trade, which was that's one that has a pretty big impact on the makeup of the team. It was already cautious optimism, but they had a pretty clear core idea of what they were going to do differently this year. And now with the way that they got rid of they got rid of three of their five most important players from last year. They still have Smart and they still have Horford, who are, I think, the most important components to their offense and their defense, respectively. So, at least they kept those guys in place. And while Kyrie is definitely different in his style from Isaiah and his shot distribution especially, it's, they still have a great ball-dominant point guard that can score from anywhere on the floor. So it still allows them to do a lot of the same stuff they want to do. However, the system they've been running has been very different early on. Their spacing hasn't been quite the same as it was last year. They've been playing with the ball. They've been taking more mid-range shots. They've been moving the ball kind of through the mid-range area a lot more. I think a lot of that is just kind of, they're going to have to slowly change the way that Kyrie plays and the areas of the floor that he utilizes. And I think a lot of their guys that they have right now, they play in that zone. Tatum does, Hayward does, although he can play behind the three-point line pretty well too. But so they're going through a pretty huge adjustment period right now. Stevens has been saying that when they got started with training camp, I think it was, he said at practice on Saturday that everybody wants to build Rome in a day when you get started with training camp. And they know, especially with this team, where they only have four holdovers out of the 14 guys on the roster, that they might be able to build the Parthenon if they're lucky in the first half of the season. So they are putting in the bare bones fundamentals of what their system's going to be. But I think the team that they are now is going to look very drastically different compared to where they are in April.
What has Kyrie been like on the floor, off the floor? What has he sort of been like since he got to Boston? Because I think people in Cleveland have seen the stuff he said that hasn't played well in his former home. But when you call Cleveland not a sports city, you're gonna I think just we don't need to get into this, but I think he's gonna get booed on Tuesday. I'm very sure of that. I'd be shocked.
I agree. He said, and he wouldn't have if he hadn't said that.
Yeah, I think it would have been a little lukewarm, I think the way he the trade and stuff itself. But I think the stuff he has said since he left has basically made him the anti Richard Jefferson in terms of how he's left, the legend Richard Jefferson. But with what's going on with Like, how has he been in Boston? So, like, and how do you think he's fit in with what they're doing? And how is he just – how does he just kind of seem in this new spotlight for him?
Interesting. I mean, I've gotten to know him a little bit over the years, especially covering him during the conference finals last year. I got to talk to him a lot more, and he fascinates me to no end. I mean, it is so fascinating talking to him, watching the way his mind works. You know, you know how like guys when they have some sort of big thing happen, the PR staff sits down with them, their agent sits down with them, and they get together like their little book of lines that they're using to describe everything. His was perfecting the craft, opportunity conducive to growth, and I've been trying to, frankly, sarcastically throw those words in as much as I can when writing about Kyrie. But he, at first, it was like really interesting, and then it got more and more repetitive. And I think everything that he was doing that seemed so novel when I got to cover him for a couple of weeks during back in May, I'm seeing now it can get a little bit repetitive. But I'm sure there's a lot more layers of the onion to peel back, especially as he starts actually playing and there's more stuff to talk about. But I think for him, his whole thing is like he wants to live above the BS of the media. And that was the whole flat earth thing where it was the haha, I was just kidding. It was just to play the media. And like, I think now we might be kind of trying to do the same thing with his comments about Cleveland versus Boston and like, see, the media will jump after everything. But like at a certain point, it's, well, you're saying it. So the media is reporting it because you're saying something ridiculous. And it's not really our fault for reporting on the ridiculous things you're saying. Now, as far as comparing the two cities, it's like Boston is known as like one of the most rabid sports towns in America. So it's not, you know, it's not like Cleveland's a bad sports town, but it's like the level in Boston is drastically different, I think, than almost anywhere else. Although, frankly, while Celtics fans are passionate, the Red Sox and the Patriots exist on a different plane compared to the other teams. While I think in Cleveland, the Cavaliers probably might have a bigger share of the attention from sports fans than the Celtics do, frankly.
Well, right now, it's definitely a Browns town, and I think even the Cleveland baseball team, yeah, it's really sad actually. But I think the Cleveland baseball team is a little different, and I don't know. I think one of the things that I think about Kyrie since he's gone is that he has tried to sell himself in a different way than he did in Cleveland. I mean, that opening press conference was some of the most open and engaged he was with people asking him questions than he really ever was in Cleveland. And I'm really curious to see if that holds up over 82 games, if he's going to continue to be sort of happy to do some of it, because he was not a big happy to do scrums kind of guy in Cleveland.
I think he's really enjoying it right now.
But like, what does it mean? Like if he gets smacked in opening night, right? Like, let's just say like the Celtics lose by 10 on opening night and LeBron just dominates that game, and you know, it's a bad night for him, because I think I think opening night, at least, I don't know how this will hold up over the season with the Celtics team, because Hayward, I think, is the in a vacuum, the better player, even if Kyrie has like the name. Like, how does he hold, like, if things don't go kind of how like he hopes they do and what he's trying to do in that environment, whatever he like trying to accomplish stuff on his own, if LeBron smacks him around, like, how does that hold up over the year, right? So, like, how does that change?
Opening night won't be as big of a deal. And, you know, he's really embracing it early on because, I mean, I think the dynamic with the Boston media is generally that at first, everyone basically follows what the PR lead is excited and interested and fascinated by someone. And then you give him some time to prove himself. And then, you know, if the tide turns on that person, if you're disappointed in the expectations that you have for that person, that they don't live up to it, then things start to get a little more aggressive. Frankly, it's just as simple as that. With Boston, there's just a ton more reporters than most small markets. I mean, Cleveland's a small market, but has had a massive media
LeBron brought Dave McMenamin to Cleveland, right? Like, he brought an ESPN beat guy in the
ground. Like, guys, yeah.
Like, I think the Athletic as a business model, part of the reason they're in Cleveland is because like you could capitalize on LeBron.
And Jason's a great reporter.
Yeah, and Jason's incredible, and he was working, but I think like those two things, but without LeBron as the hook, you know, like there, I think there is that difference there. But Boston is this. You're right. Like, I mean, just what that presser. Thinking that Boston isn't, you know, a metropolitan city the size of New York or LA or some of these other cities, like it is a relatively huge city, but not it's not sprawling and massive a metropolis as some other places are.
I mean, I can tell you, I cover the team on a pretty significant basis, and I probably am like 10th or 11th, I think, in the order of the people that cover the team the most. Like, there's so many reporters on this beat. So I think Kyrie is enjoying the fact that there's these big scrums around him every single time, and they're mostly local, so they're not flying in with kind of SportsCenter clip kind of questions. You know, the ESPN guy here, Chris Forsberg, is like one of my favorite beat reporters in the country.
He's very, very good.
Yeah, he doesn't even ask that many questions in scrums, frankly. He's more of a behind-the-scenes kind of guy. So, like, you don't have a lot of gotcha journalism, as Sarah Palin used to say about the Boston media market. And it's a true fact, by the way. And so,
I never thought we'd get a Sarah Palin reference.
I do my best. And so I think he's really enjoying the inquisitive nature of Boston's media trying to get to know him. I mean, I'm really fascinated. Like, my role on the beat, I think, in general, is I'm more of an X's and O's focused kind of guy, which gets me in trouble when I ask questions where I get awful answers because they're not willing to answer them for the most part, or they're too specific. But he's someone that seems to be really interested in talking about that kind of stuff. So I've been really enjoying that so far, and I hope to get a lot more of that. I've been away from the team for a few weeks now, so I've only done like 5 or 6 media availability so far since he got here. But I think depending on how things go, the national media is going to catch up and start covering Boston more and more this year as they get more competitive and as they do more national games. And I think he's going to, if things aren't going really well, which I don't think the team is going to do very well at first, but I think by the end of the year they're going to be really good, then I think the heat's going to start to turn up on him because he has, unlike every other person that's on this team, including the coach and the GM, he has put a massive burden on himself. Everyone else has been preaching patience. And with him, while he is preaching patience, he also has been very clearly saying, I am doing this because I want to strike out on my own and be one of the best of all time and win titles as my own man, basically outside of LeBron's shadow. I think it's, there are certain tea leaves you can try to read into it that go outside of that network or that hub of distraction. But like the fact is, it's very obvious that he didn't want to be living in LeBron's shadow. And he also wanted to be preemptive in getting out of that situation where I would be happy to debate whether or not Cleveland has a good overall franchise management program, but he wanted to get out of the situation before LeBron possibly left. Now, after what's going on in OKC, it certainly seems like it's not nearly as likely that LeBron would leave because there isn't an obvious destination for him the way that the Lakers were beforehand.
I also just don't know if why Kyrie left is necessarily all about wanting to get out of there before LeBron did. Like, I just don't think some of what he said makes me think that. Like, I don't know that for sure, but I just think the vibe you get off of what he's saying is, yeah, maybe that's something. But I also do think he wants to prove that he can be his own guy.
I think it's mostly and, like, that. Lead.
Yeah, like, I think especially because, like, what Boston is, like, Hayward's really, really good, but it's not someone that I think dominates him star-wise. Like, Kyrie is the bigger name of those two, and I don't know if it's close.
Well, I think they have a perfect complement between, I've been impressed that no one has thrown around the big three name yet for these guys, because, like, none of them except for Kyrie really kind of evoke the idea of big. None of them are big stars, but it's like Hayward and Horford are just like the most perfect complementary players for their position. They can do absolutely everything at a all-star caliber level, and that is perfect to put next to a guy like Kyrie, who does, like, 2 things at a top 5 in the league level and a few other things as well. And his passing, I think, especially, like, the only game of the 4 preseason games where I felt like we saw, like, what the real Celtics are going to be was our last one against Charlotte. And Kyrie, he still hasn't been very efficient, but he was kind of like sitting back and just really playing point guard. And he was making some great plays, throwing some great entry passes from the 3-point line. He had one where he had, like, a quick touch pass, like, flinger to Al Horford on the low block. That was, like, a perfect pass that, like, it, like, led Al to turn and drop step while catching the pass for an easy layup. I mean, he's starting to demonstrate that he could have some of that more aggressive playmaking skills where he's able to move the ball across the court and the kind of stuff that he's been criticized for not being able to do. And that's, like, the big question mark for him. I think we're starting to see some of that stuff peek out. And that's stuff that we can see that Hayward and Horford both do at an elite level, or I guess for non-point guards do it at an elite level. And that's something that they need from Kyrie, obviously, if they want to be really good, because their whole approach here is that they want to have these 5-man lineups where every single player on the floor is, like, a great playmaker and there's no point guard. And it's just, I mean, like, right now, a lot of the time, Gordon Hayward, I think, is as much the point guard as Kyrie is when they're on the floor. And they can just change it up as much as they want, especially when they have Marcus Smart out there and Tatum eventually and Jaylen Brown a little bit now. But it's like these lineups that they have, it's everybody's a playmaker. There is no de facto point guard. Everything is just, it's just an amorphous blob of ball movement, basically. And that's when they're really at their optimal level.
Looking at this team on paper, we don't know yet. We got to see how things do shake out. It's going to be a long season. I think there's certainly, you mentioned this as well, that there are going to be some struggling points at the beginning because this is a overhauled team in a lot of ways. But do you think they could be better than last year?
By the end of the season, I think they'll be significantly better than last year. I expect them to win a few less games. They won 53 last year. I've been running with 51, which is a number that seemed to be a decent consensus with a bunch of people I talked to around the league and with the team. That was a month and a half ago, I think, when I came up with that. So, you know, things have probably changed a little bit. But frankly, what I've seen from them so far in preseason, they're pretty much exactly where I thought they would be. You know, they won most of their games pretty comfortably, at least when the starters were out there before, like, the deep bench units got out there. And I didn't think that they looked that great. I thought they looked pretty solid, and the competition they were going against was decent competition. You know, Nick Batum got injured early on, so that second game in Charlotte with Dwight Howard still trying to figure out how he fits with that team, you know, they weren't quite the same team that we expect Charlotte to be. But so, you know, looking at the system that they're running right now, it's not quite what they should be running. It's a lot of it is kind of like give and go actions where like a guy is driving to the free throw line and then kicking it back to a wide open 3-point shooter and like stuff that I just don't expect to be readily available for them during the regular season. But pretty much everyone on the team, at least in like the core part of the rotation, is looking better than expected. So, I mean, they're going to, when they really have their system right now, it's like they have like the first three pages of the playbook in place, basically, but there's still going to be 20 to 30 more pages added in there throughout the year. So they're just kind of operating on a more fundamental level at this point before they really turn it up.
So is the starting lineup as of right now, Kyrie, Smart, Hayward, Marcus Morris, Al Horford?
Eventually, I think that will be it, but I don't think Morris is going to start in the first game. I guess it depends on matchup, but he doesn't seem ready yet. He seems pretty rusty. He only played one game so far, and he didn't seem like he fit in very well, so I think it's going to take him a while to get a rhythm with everyone. They've been starting Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and I still can't believe they've been starting Tatum, but he's looked so much better than I could have expected for him at this point. You know, he's still 19, and he overall just looks more comfortable than I could have, way more than I could have expected. Al Horford even said a few weeks ago during training camp that Tatum is like the most ready rookie that he's seen come into the league in his career. And I didn't really know what to expect when I would actually see it, but it is so true. I mean, there's been more ready rookies that have come to the league in that time, but at least for Horford, for guys he's played with, that's definitely got to be true because Tatum has been starting and he's starting as the four for the most part, although that doesn't mean a ton on this team because they switch everything and Hayward is a little bit bigger and Jaylen Brown's gotten pretty big, but he is switching on defense really well. He understands the concept better than I could have expected. He understands that when there's a ball screen, he has to jump up high on the screen when he switches so that he's basically doing like a semi hedge and that forces the ball handler to backtrack a little bit. He was guarding, I think, Kemba Walker a little bit on some of those switches, and he was like actually able to keep up with him and some of the other guys he was covering that should have been able to get around him. So, you know, Tatum's defensive footwork is better than I expected. He's a lot more comfortable on offense. For the most part, he's kind of spotting up from the wings on the weak side, but when the ball gets to him, he can go into his moves or he can shoot, or he can pass it. He's way more comfortable than I could have expected. I would be shocked if he started, especially if LeBron is playing. I can't imagine that he would be starting because, you know, it would be his first game in his career going up against LeBron. I think they probably want to bring him off the bench early on. But, you know, Aaron Baines is probably going to be ready for opening night. Marcus Morris will be healthy for opening night, but I don't think he's ready to start. We could see Jaylen Brown starting at the pseudo 3 or 4 and then Marcus Smart also starting, especially against a backcourt of Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade. I think it makes a lot of sense for Marcus Smart to be starting. But their whole thing is going to be, you know, I wasn't sure if they were going to actually do this, but Stevens is saying they're going to do it. They're going to change up the starting lineups pretty frequently based on matchup. And it makes the most sense. To, you know, coaches almost always resist this. I mean, they started Amir Johnson at the 4/5 pretty much every single game that he was here in Boston for the last couple of years because they wanted to have a second big starting out there. But they're finally willing to get away from that, which very few teams in the league have been doing. Even Golden State still starts Zaza Pachulia at the 5. But they don't have like a right now. They don't have a clear answer as to what their best starting lineup is. They have like 4 or 5 options that make sense and are probably equally as good. But for them, it's basically just matchup dependent.
Yeah. What do you make of who will defend LeBron for this team? Because that to me is one of the things I think about a lot. Just because they're gonna have to answer that question at some point. I didn't feel bad for Tatum, but when he said the other day that he dreamed about it, and he said it went well in his dream, I was like, bud.
Well, like, guess what? You're about to wake up.
Like, yeah, like, it's not good. Like Jalen did it last year, and he did, like, well, like, in that first game that they played each other last year, and I was like, oh, like, he hung, but then LeBron, like, blew by him once, and I was like, oh, yeah, right, like, this is LeBron. And it's tough, like, but who on this team is defending LeBron, like, when it actually gets down to it?
It's Jalen. He's going to be doing it. He's gotten a lot better.
Is he ready for that?
Yeah, I mean he's not as ready as Jay Crowder was 2 years ago when Crowder was defending at his peak. And, you know, Crowder struggled last year to cover LeBron. There's a few reasons why that happened, but you know, Brown I think is good enough already at this point. What I've seen from him early on. I'm working on a piece right now for Celtics Wire on this, but. From what I've seen from him early on, not only is he bigger, he says he's up to, I think, about 6'8", 235 now. So he's kind of he's getting to that size where he is a true 2-4 wing that can really play with power and handle guys like LeBron. But his knowledge of the game defensively is getting a lot better. He's improved on his on-ball defense and learning how to read guys and how to stay in front of them, which I think is helping him mostly for covering point guards, which is something he has to do a lot in their defensive scheme. But he's big enough now that I think he can handle guarding LeBron, and his footwork is good enough that, like, you know, LeBron, his whole thing is he gets you with his first step, he gets around your hip, and then it's over. And I think he is smart enough and quick enough now that he can keep up with LeBron in that regard and try to keep LeBron in front of him. And he's always been kind of like nimble enough and had enough body control that if he can stay in front of guys, no matter what they try to put on him because of his length and because of his body control, he manages to not foul while smothering him. And I think that's why he has the chance to be a really special defender because of his versatility, but he still has the ability. You know, he can guard really 1-4, but he still has the ability to, you know, stay in front of guys like a two guard usually would be able to.
Yeah, we'll see on that. I just think like there. I think there are like 3 guys in the league that actually have a chance. You know,
oh yeah, if you're getting to that level, then it's not like gonna be. Yeah. It's not gonna be like Roberson or something like that. Like he'll do a decent job, and they're probably gonna be switching even when LeBron's out there because they have Hayward who also can definitely guard LeBron. And they have Smart, who we know can guard LeBron, even though he's now...
Can Skinny Marcus Smart?
That's literally about to say. So, like, that's been one of the questions. My take on this has always been, I mean, Smart... So, in general, the actual body weight that someone has, generally, in most situations, shouldn't impact their ability to defend with power because it's mostly about aggression and speed and determination, which is why like Joakim Noah was always such an elite defender and so powerful, even though he was a really skinny guy, because he always hit first and he played with aggression and confidence. Now, I know Kevin Love was one of those guys that talked about how like losing the weight kind of hurt him in that regard, but that was mostly defending down low. Marcus guarding LeBron, it's like with him, I don't think he needs to hold off LeBron so much. He's not going to get into a ton of leverage situations where LeBron just with sheer power can push him out of the way. Like for him, it's mostly just about staying in front of LeBron and hitting LeBron as much as possible. And he does that as well as any guy in the league. So I don't think him losing weight would make that big of a difference. Frankly, his defense has been better than ever so far in the preseason because he's more agile. And his recovery speed's better, even though it was already pretty elite. And he still is, you know, he still defends like an absolute menace. He still dives after every single ball. He can still rip the ball out of guys' hands in a way that pretty much no one else in the league can. So I think Marcus is only going to get better. And he's been so solid offensively and is really coming around offensively in the first few games here that his, you know, the amount of effort that teams are going to now have to start putting in to guard him is going to have an is going to have a better effect for him and his ability to focus on defense, because teams aren't going to be able to take a break whenever he gets the ball in the way that they were able to a little bit last year.
I'm very curious to see how they defend some of what the Cavs are going to do, because I mean, you can definitely look at right now, especially with IT out, there's less spacing for the Cavs. There's just a little bit less of the room around LeBron while IT is out. I mean, we'll see how Wade looks at it. And they haven't played together much. LeBron has played the one preseason game. They were kind of adjusting to him. There's some stuff with Kevin Love that we'll see. I know he's been a little in and out in the preseason. We'll see how Tuesday looks for Cleveland. I don't know if you're going to get a very functioning Cleveland team on that day. That's kind of interesting kind of wrinkle to this. But what are you expecting out of Tuesday? I think there's going to be... I'm very much ready for the overreactions to the game. That's one of the things I just know. I'm not saying it'll be you or me that overreact this, but I don't know how much we'll actually learn. And people will be yes, it's clearly that Boston's ready to compete, or it's clear that the Cavs are washed, or that the Cavs are much better. There'll just be some sort of overreaction narrative to that game. I don't expect to learn very much. I think that the biggest things that will happen that we'll see is kind of how Kyrie, in a regular season game and in the scale, will kind of fits into what Boston does. How Cleveland reacts to him, we'll look at how him and LeBron interact, if at all, and kind of how these new Cavs pieces do handle some of what Boston does. I think that there's little things, but I don't think we're going to learn a ton other than some of these very nuanced kind of but still baseline level information that we can apply to when they play second and third times in the regular season in a few months.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of these teams are going to be drastically different when they play later in the year than what they look like tomorrow. And frankly, the person I'm most interested in watching is going to be Jay Crowder, because I think he's the one that has the biggest bone to pick in all this. You know, there's been so much attention paid to Isaiah and how he said that he felt betrayed and everything like that. But Jay Crowder was the one that got traded the day that his mom died, right before his mom died. So he's got to be feeling it too. Although I don't think they were aware that was going to be happening at the time. And by the way, I couldn't make it to practice today, but tweets coming out of practice for the Celtics now. Marcus Morris has some knee soreness, and he's going to miss the coming week plus, per Brad Stevens. So
yeah, I'm looking at the Brad Twitter. I have tweets I go open right now, and Jake King, you should go listen to Locked On Celtics after you listen to this. But it's Irving, Brown, Hayward, Tatum, Horford. So that means you're probably getting. Looking at that, I mean, Hayward's probably on Wade there. Is Tatum on Crowder, and then Horford's on Love? Is that kind of what we're looking at there with Brown on LeBron?
That sounds about right. You know, it's funny. I just wrote a thing about how I don't think Marcus Morris is going to start early on. And I wrote that I think it's a remote possibility that Jason Tatum will start. And I think I wrote that before the Hornets game. So I have a little bit of an excuse in that one. But I'm blown away that Jason Tatum is going to be starting in his first game against LeBron James. I mean, that's amazing. So I'm going to, as soon as we get off here, I'm going to start writing about that one. But yeah. It just, for one, it goes to show how impressed they are with Tatum. And I am too. I mean, just watching him, I don't care about his ability to back down smaller guys and hit a fadeaway jumper. It's just that he's able to play within the system. And that's amazing for a 19-year-old. So I think the system's a little, like we were saying, it's a little stripped down at this point. So it'll get more complex and we'll see what happens there. I think Brown is probably going to guard LeBron early on. Maybe it'll be Hayward. The point is they're going to be switching everything, I assume, with this lineup, because this lineup can switch 2 through 5 really easily. Kyrie switching is going to be a little tricky, but frankly, Kyrie is pretty bad at icing screens, as we've seen so far, and as has been very well documented in Cleveland. So just maybe putting him in a switch heavy scheme might actually be better for him, because he has to do less, I guess, less movement early in the screen, that first half second in the screen, he has to move a little bit less and he can be a little bit late on it. And they can just call switch, which is kind of easier for him. But every time that they try to ice a screen, he's just always way behind. He's late. You're supposed to jump over the screener and try to force the ball handler under the screen. And he just doesn't really do it at all. So maybe this will be better for him, but they're going up against a team that switching against them could be really dangerous, because if you get Kyrie matched up against LeBron, LeBron's going to take him to work.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think you will see the Cavs do. I think you are going to see a different offense from them this year to an extent. But I do think when they're playing a team like Boston that has a point guard like Kyrie that can be attacked and can be put in the pick and roll, they're going to do it. And I think, too, like it's worth noting that Love has been very good against Horford the last couple of years. Like, he's played very, very well against Horford in the playoffs. You can still bring Tristan Thompson off the bench to dominate on the glass, and that's something Boston, I think, still going to will have to figure out. Because I know Aron Baynes helps in that regard, you know, but, like, I don't know if Aron Baynes is going to solve that problem. Like, I just can't believe Aron Baynes is good enough to fix the rebounding issue that Boston's going to have against Cleveland every time they do play.
He's a good matchup for Thompson. I mean,
Tristan, if he can keep him a little bit fresher this year, and like that's one of the things I think his move to the bench will do if they stay small. I think that's going to be just something that like he should be fresher, and I still think you can go to Love Thompson, something that's really worked against Boston. You know, like, and I don't know exactly what they would do. And we'll see kind of how they'll kind of look defensively in some of this, but I kind of wonder. Like, what kind of stuff they'll do. Because I wouldn't shock me if LeBron is, like, on Tatum or something. You know?
That would be interesting,
Because I think he's going to roam, and I think that'll be interesting, too. Because, like, will they trap Kyrie? Like, will they try to trap Hayward? Like, how will they approach it? That's kind of one of the things I'm looking at, too. But at the same time, I don't know how you feel about this, but I just don't know how much we're actually going to learn on Tuesday. I just think it's going to be more of, let's get this going. And it's good. I think it's good that we're starting with this. But I just don't know how much we will learn.
I agree with you. I think as far as Kyrie, I think they should blitz him because D. Rose is not going to be able to guard him very effectively. And, I mean, it's the first game of the year, so maybe Dwayne will be good on defense. But, like, by the end of the year, he's going to suck. So, well, you know, Wade basically plays defense for 5 minutes a night. It's usually glorious, but it's usually only 5 minutes a night. So I think early on, LeBron should be on Tatum. And Tatum is going to be kind of roaming the weak side, so that gives LeBron freedom to kind of play off of him. And they can use him to run quick doubles and stuff like that, or just a shade into a lane to try to cut off that lane. That's what makes the most sense. You know, this Boston team, eventually, the offense is designed so that the Cavaliers can't get away with running out Love and Thompson, because one of those guys is going to get put on an island against a score that can blow them away. So that's what Boston's trying to do eventually. And you know, that's something that they've kind of always done, where it was kind of a pick your poison, where the Celtics are going to be more fluid offensively, but they're going to give up size and be vulnerable in the offensive glass. But this Celtics team will be able – they'll be capable in a way that they weren't before, where everybody on the floor can, you know, drive off of a closeout, or they can all shoot. So you're not going to be able to hide a guy on defense the way you could before.
Yeah, absolutely in that. I'll wrap it up on this last question. What is something you just want to see on opening night, whether it's just – what is, like, the one aspect of this game that you're most interested in? And ultimately, too, like, where do you just sort of see the East – beyond this game sort of shaking out underneath these two teams? And are these two teams actually going to be the class in the East when we get down to the end of it? And those two different questions, but we're just going to roll with it.
I mean, one, obviously, we just want to see LeBron and Kyrie have an absolutely bloody grudge match. Grudge match is the wrong word. But we want to see them taking it to each other. You want to see LeBron do that Jason Terry alley-oop poster slam on Kyrie. You want to see Wade get involved to help LeBron get revenge. I mean, that's what's obviously the most exciting part of it. Really interested to see what Jay Crowder does, see if he gets into a fight with someone on the Celtics. That would be really interesting. I'm hoping Danny Ainge is sitting near the court so that we can get shots of Jay Crowder or Isaiah Thomas yelling at him or something like that. Frankly, it'll just be interesting to see if those guys go talk to Brad Stevens or to their former teammates and just what happens there. For actual gameplay stuff besides the LeBron thing, I mean, as someone who's covering Boston, I just really want to see, you know, what level they turn it up to now that they're running their offense against a team like Cleveland. And frankly, I'm curious to see if Cleveland is any good on defense with this team. I'm pretty skeptical that's going to happen, even though Crowder, for all of his issues last year, is a still pretty great addition for them on defense. So I'm interested to see how different the Celtics' offense looks, whether they're still running kind of the same style that they were running in the preseason, or if it's going to start to, you know, kind of gravitate more towards what they were doing last year, where they're spread out more and they're running pick and rolls further behind the three-point line. And then how are they going to utilize Hayward? Because Hayward is someone that I think has been pretty underutilized so far, and they're still trying to figure out exactly how to maximize him. And he's been good, but he hasn't really done anything that's really told me like he clearly has his dominant role figured out for this team. It's mostly just been like a lot of small actions. He's very crafty, but they haven't – I feel like Kyrie, it's been pretty clear what they can do with him. But Gordon, I think they're just scratching the surface. And Stevens, you know, I mean, he knows Gordon as well as anybody out there. And they said they have plans to really unleash a lot of the things that he can do that he hasn't done yet, although, frankly, he did just about everything imaginable under Quinn Snyder in Utah. But right. I'm really excited to see what they end up doing with him. And then I'm just curious to see what the short rotations are. I assume they're going to use 9-man rotations. They're going to have to cut out like 3 guys that have been playing so far in the preseason. I'm really interested to see who it is, like who's the extra big that's going to be used, whether it's Daniel Tice or Gershon Yabusele. I guess on Cleveland's end, I'm interested to see how much Swish gets utilized and how they bring in Thompson, who's closing out the game, you know, whether or not Rose is out there to close out the game. I mean, you know, like, Cleveland doesn't have Isaiah yet, so like all this matters to a certain degree, but at the end of the day, it has no implications really on what to expect come April and May. But it'll be very interesting because it's pretty rare that you have the kind of blood involved with an opening game like this.
Yeah. I do think these two teams will be the best in the East. I think, you know, you will have Washington there. Could jump ahead of, depending on how the standings shake out, they could be better in the regular season than either Boston and or Cleveland. And I think Toronto will be solid too, with the Bucks kind of being the wild card there. But this is the matchup, I think, of the two best teams over the course of the season. We'll certainly have Jared back on again to break the Celtics all down. Jared, just give everyone a reminder on there where they can find you on Twitter and give them a quick little tease of what Celtics Wire is going to have upcoming this week.
Sure. So Jared Weiss, NBA on the tweet machine, and also follow the Celtics Wire, all one word. So Celtics Wire is my new site. It's part of USA Today SMG. And we're part of that NBA Wire network, which you've probably heard about. Lonzo Wire, I feel like everyone's heard about that one. There is a LeBron Wire, too. So
yep, definitely Eric check Garcia that out. Gunderson was on their show last week, so you can check that out as well. Yeah, Eric's awesome. Eric is one of my favorite people.
Yeah, so one of the things that I've been doing, which I still have to finish them all off in the next couple of days, is basically a performance review series. I work for the state government during the day, so I get a good taste of bureaucracy, and I thought it would be fun to do some of that with the Celtics. So I've been doing basically like a performance review for every guy where we set out a few objectives, and I'm going to go back and do updates throughout the season. So stay tuned for a bunch more of those coming out. And then just I'm just going to try to dive into as much film as possible over the next week or so. So stay tuned for a lot of X's and O's breakdowns, you know, breakdowns of how the Celtics defend LeBron, how the Cavaliers try to neutralize Kyrie, how the Celtics offense has evolved under this new roster composition. So yeah, that's just CelticsWire.com.
Still weird to hear you say how the Cavs will stop Kyrie, but that is where we are at in this weird NBA. We're finally getting to the culmination of an interesting summer. But for myself, for Jared, this has been Locked On Cavs. Please drop us a review on iTunes if you're so willing for that 5-star rating and review. We'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully, I'm going to be in San Diego, so hopefully we'll have an episode on Tuesday or on Wednesday at Brackham, the game. If not, I will break down the game at some point when I get home on Thursday. I'm going to TiVo and definitely watch it again because we'll see how that goes. But this has been Locked On Cavs. Thank you again for Jared. Find the pod wherever you get podcasts and use that promo code LOMBA to hit $20 on your first SeatGeek purchase. And if you need tickets for Tuesday's game, you can use that promo code if you have a new SeatGeek before and save $20. So go do that. But this has been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.